Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but I always feel like violence on our public transportation systems would be a lot more tolerable if these guys were fighting with swords.
So if you think that if we all had scabbards on the train system...
Well, I'm not arguing for everyone to have a sword, necessarily. I'm not saying sword-toting populace is a safe populace or anything to that extent. I'm just saying that, like, some dude shoots another dude at the train station, it's this huge panic thing. But if two dudes are sword fighting, I mean, you're going to kind of take note. You're going to watch. You're going to hopefully back up. But
I understand what you're saying.
There's something stylish. There's something classy. There's something exhilarating about about a good sword fight.
I mean, you make it sound like we live in Paris, and someone's just going, "Oh God!"
That's what I'm saying. It would be. I mean, that's how I imagine, how it goes in Paris. It's just random duels breaking out on the subways.
Some of our French listeners, if you're out there, just if you could confirm that, would be great.
Yeah, and then Europe is just lousy with 400-year-old immortals trying to cut each other's heads off. We know that from watching the TV.
Yeah.
But of course, having watched the TV, having watched movies, occasionally we do get to see a great sword fight. And there is, for my money, nothing better. Do you have any in mind? Is there a particular sword fight that sticks out to you? What?
I have a couple. The first one is Princess Bride.
Ooh, that does have some good sword fighting.
Yeah, Inigo Montoya. Mm-hmm. He says the whole thing like, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepare to die.
Yes.
And then they actually have a great fight scene.
Yeah, yeah. That's some really good swordmanship. And he fights, he can fight both handed. Right.
They both actually, Wesley and Inigo both, it's kind of trickery, right? Because it was edited, but they use the right and left hand. So it looks really fancy. And then my all time favorite though is Kill Bill Volume 1, the last, fight scene in which, I believe it is Oren Ishii, played by, Lucy Liu, fights the bride, Uma Thurman. And it is, I mean, I love the scene. It's a gorgeous scene. I mean, she's just, Uma Thurman's character has just slaughtered the crazy 88, this gang. She's blood splattered. She goes out into this courtyard in Tokyo where she meets her, her enemy, Oren, and the snow is falling. And it's just beautiful because the scene is, it's stark and it's full of honor. Mm-hmm. And, there's some exchanges that are really great. And then, of course, Lucy Liu's character gets completely decapitated. Well, not completely decapitated. I take that back. The top of her head gets decapitated.
Yeah, well, it's like decapitation is such a hallmark of sword fights in cinema. It's like after a while they realize, we can't just go for the straight up neck cut. We need to go for something a little more inventive. So you see the top of the head, like the brain cut.
Yeah, which is really disconcerting, I think, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it allows her to say this line, which I love. She says, "That really was a Hattori Hanzo sword." Which, to me, that's what that scene is about, right? The power of this sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that also brings to mind, this was not one of my favorite sword fight films, but there was that film Equilibrium years back. It was kind of a Matrix-y type thing.
I have not seen that.
Had Christian Bale in it, Sean Bean, and it's not the best film, but some of the action was pretty slick. Spoiler alert, but Taye Diggs gets his face cut off. Like not like straight up, we can't actually cut anybody's head off because it's not exciting enough for modern cinema. So just like the front of his head is cut off. But if I were to choose.
I'm thinking about that.
I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
So it's like he could have been in the bodies exhibit then because there's like a slice of his face.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It's kind of like the dudes who choreographed these and planned this out. They were like, the bodies exhibit is their favorite place.
Yeah. Of course. But
in terms of like just great sword fights, my two favorites are probably the end fight scene between Macbeth and Macduff in Roman Polanski's adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, that one, because it's just such a brutal drag out fight. Like there's nothing like fancy and swashbuckly about it. It's just two dudes, going at it with this air of, on one side, vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side, backed against the wall. With nothing to lose. And then the movie Rob Roy has a great scene between Archibald Cunningham, played by Tim Roth, and Rob Roy, played by Neeson. So those are two great ones. Ridley Scott's The Duelist also is generally right up there on the top of everyone's list as having just a fantastic cinematic sword fight.
So in case you guys are wondering, what do you think we're talking about today? Swords, how we romanticize them, how they're a huge part of our culture,
mm-hmm.
What they're made of and the craftsmanship, just all sorts of different aspects of how this tool really entered our society and forever changed the world and the course of the world.
Right. And the word tool is essential here. And I urge anyone to go back and listen to our podcast that we did on tool use and the evolution of tool use, because a lot of what we say there really sums up or really gets to the heart of what's amazing about the sword. The idea that the sword, I mean, it's kind of a cliche from any kind of film where you've heard a master swordsman instructing the young apprentice, telling them about the sword is an extension of the human body, that the sword is part of your arm. And as studies have shown neurologically, this is the way humans and other animals conceptualize their tool use. That's how it ends up making sense inside the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, at its very basis, it is the augmentation of the human body with something to perform a task. In this case, a death, dealing device.
Right. We've talked about this before too. Like, you've brought it up. Okay. If you wear contacts, then are you still human? Right. Cause you're augmenting yourself.
Right.
And so we think about the sword and when we think about it now, we think of it's completely antiquated. It's been out of general use for at least 200 years.
Right.
It just in a very, in a sportsman's like way. And yet here is this augmenting of ourselves back in the day, because at one point, really, especially in the Middle Ages, almost all men had a sword, right? This was very common to possess.
Yeah. If you could afford it. For sure.
Yeah. But although at some point it really, was affordable to a degree. I mean, maybe your sword would break and you would be killed in a fight. But, it's very possible that a peasant could have it and certainly a king. So this was something that at one point in history unified a great many people.
So the origin of the sword is another one of those things that just kind of vanishes into prehistory when you try and, nail it down. Like the earliest blades were likely made out of bone, bits of stone. Eventually, they're creating things out of bronze. We found some really amazing, not when I say we, I mean humans, archaeologists, not...
Right, not you and I, last week.
Have found arsenic copper alloy swords inlaid with silver from roughly 3300 BC.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been really into it for a while. And as far as the creation of the modern sword goes, it generally comes down to heat treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make steel at room temperature. You have to get iron glowing with heat. You have to infuse it with carbon, then quench the resulting material in a cooling liquid, where you get the, you know, the very cinematic scene of somebody thrusting the newly forged sword into the,
mm-hmm.
into the water or into the snow or something. And then there's, you know, there's layering. It's a very complicated craft to create a fine sword. And some of these techniques have been lost over time.
Right.
Or certainly, the appreciation for it is often, forgotten as human warfare moves on to different, technologies.
Yeah. There's one Scottish sword from the Middle Ages that I think it's fascinating. It is in the movie Reclaiming the Blade.
Uh-huh.
They feature it there. And, this sword was forged by weaving six strands of iron together. And then the edge was, made of steel.
Uh-huh.
And it made it incredibly strong. But the steel made it really like very, lethal, right?
Because
it could cut very well. But they were saying that forging this blade would have taken thousands of hammer blows struck just right in order to both strengthen the steel edge and maintain the degree of flexibility in the blade. So, obviously, the person who is creating this, the blacksmith, is highly skilled at this. And in fact, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, some swords, we can't even quite figure out how to replicate today.
Right. And like you alluded to there, these things have to take a lot of stress. It's not just hacking into, unarmed peasants with these things. It's, they're going to hit wood. They're going to hit armor. They're going to hit bone. They're
mm-hmm.
going to, there's going to be stress ricocheting through the material or reverberating through the material
mm-hmm.
itself. You have to make anyone could potentially make something and call it a sword. You could carve one out of kindling. But to make an instrument like this that is going to last, in many cases, for centuries and centuries, it requires a great deal of skill. Another quick note, though, a particularly interesting weapon I ran across in researching this. There's a Danish blade called a seek, S-E-A-X.
Okay.
Or perhaps it's a sex. I may have the pronunciation there wrong, but I just can't bring
Tell
myself.
Tell us about the sex.
I just can't bring myself to talk about Beowulf slaying Grendel with his sex.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, probably can. But at any rate, Beowulf supposedly had one of these, or would have. It's a very old blade, and the handle was actually made of something called usk or usik, which is mineralized walrus penis.
Of course.
Yeah, because the thing is, you don't want the handle to get slippery
uh-huh.
with all the blood and the Grendel blood that's going everywhere. So you want something that's going to hold tight in your hand.
Well, and I can't help thinking too that although I don't think of as walruses as like overly masculine.
What? With the big tusks?
Yeah, but I don't think of them as being like, hey, I'm going to take you down, not like a tiger.
Yeah, I guess you don't see a lot of walrus tattoos.
Right, exactly.
But we should. That would be amazing.
So, my first thought was, okay, you're just transferring the power of the walrus to mm-hmm. the handle, but perhaps that was just what was available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just an aside, there's an amazing bit of street art in San Francisco. Walrus laser beam, giant walrus laser beams coming out of his eyes. It's great.
There's a tattoo.
Yeah, if you guys see it, take a gaze at it.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
But the style of swords varies just throughout the world. Like every culture has their sort of slightly different take on the blade. And, you know, it depends on the time too. As warfare evolves, so does the sword. And we could devote a whole podcast to just discussing that. But just to briefly mention some other models. There's, of course, the rapier, the slender, sharply pointed sword that you see.
You think of that more of like a gentleman's sword.
Yeah, the gentleman's sword, early modern Europe during the 16th, 17th centuries, used for thrusting.
Pairing.
Yeah, kind of a musketeer type thing, you know? Mm-hmm. The samurai swords of Japan, which are highly revered for their craftsmanship. Those things are still around. The handles will often be replaced over time, but the blade itself often really holds up well.
Yeah, I actually read somewhere, too, that... somewhere in England, samurai swords fights have become somewhat common. Actually,
what,
it says
really?
In the UK. Yeah, it said one member of parliament says they happen every week in her home city. And the government actually moved to ban the manufacture, sale, or import of Japanese-style replica swords in 2008.
This is in the UK.
This is in the UK. And okay. This is from an article from Slate.com about swords and nerds.
Well, I mean, on one hand, maybe it's just a sign that the gathering is occurring, right? And But the other, I mean, these are not trained samurai. These are just like kids going out and hacking. They might as well be using Klingon blades, which sometimes they do. But back to actual weapons. There's also the Khanda, which is an Indian double-edged straight sword that comes to a point really abruptly, especially if you're more familiar with looking at Western and East and more traditional Western and Eastern models of the sword. This one is particularly interesting to look up, and it was used just throughout the region by like the Sikhs, the Marathas, the Jats. And then, of course, there's a sword that I've found particularly interesting to look into. And then, of course, it's like the great two-handed great sword, which you'll recognize from medieval iconography. This just sword with a really long handle that you would have to grip in two hands.
Okay.
And just a really long blade so that if the thing was standing next to the man wielding it, it would be about his height.
Okay.
And you see this... this sort of myth emerges over time that this weapon is not a skilled weapon, that it, or even if it is a skilled weapon, that it is a weapon of brute strength and brute power, and that there's not a martial art to it. Like, obviously, anyone can look at a samurai sword and look at some of the images of it, and you're like, yeah, there's definitely a martial art to that.
Well, and it's better documented too, right?
Right, right. Whereas, it's to a certain extent, it's less documented in...
And you're talking about European martial arts here.
Right, right. These were used 14th, 15th, 16th century. And even as this war began to gravitate more towards smaller weapons and thinner mm-hmm. weapons and change, I mean, initially... These new soldiers, they didn't have the resources at their fingertips. They weren't historians. So it was easy to say, oh, well, you know, today we use this more skillful blade. And in the old days, they just lumbered around with these giant pieces of steel.
Mm-hmm.
And then even today, I've read some interesting criticism pointing out that a lot of this, you have like historians looking into blades. And
right.
Like if a historian picks up even an authentic sword,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to necessarily know what to do with it. If they say it's heavy, what does that mean? This is like some 80-year-old British dude, right?
Right, and especially the ones from the Middle Ages, which they're kind of rusted out looking.
Mm-hmm.
They look very crude. So if you don't have an understanding of how they were used, then you could sort of
right.
jump to the conclusion that, you know, this is one step away from Barbary.
Right, and then if you were dealing so you can't use you can't actually mess around with the real thing. So you're looking at a replica. The problem with replicas is that a lot of times they're trying to capture the look of the weapon,
mm-hmm.
but they end up getting the weight all wrong and the balance
right.
in the weapon all wrong. And the balance in a sword is key. Like even like in a rapier, the idea is that the hilt is heavier than the sword
mm-hmm.
because it gives you balance. And these great two-handed swords you see, you often see a big ball on the end,
mm-hmm.
this pommel, and that is a counterweight. That helps in leveraging the weapon.
Yeah, and momentum, sure, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a whole system of weights to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really look back at texts from that age, I mean, people were writing books about how to fight with these things. It wasn't
yeah.
just like, here is a big sword, go out and kill people with it. No, they showed different techniques. There were different ways of doing it. There was a particular move with the long sword called in the German school of swordsmanship,
mm-hmm.
the Mordstreich or the Mordschlag, which is the murder strike or the murder blow. And this would occur when you would actually turn the sword around
yeah.
and then bash somebody in the face with that weighted pommel.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And there's not enough of that in movies, I tell you.
No. And see, you know, one of the reasons that this is the sort of information isn't sort of widespread and when we think of swords, we don't automatically start thinking about European martial arts is because these texts have been sitting around in musty libraries
mm-hmm.
and sort of lost their way, particularly in Europe when, you know, gunpowder came into play. People began to use less and less swords,
mm-hmm.
and then it was taken up as a gentleman's sport. So all of a sudden you have the sword changing from maybe a heavy instrument or a super long blade to becoming very uniform and light
mm-hmm.
So that you could, you know, have some sort of duel, which really wasn't meant to end in death, right? That was
right.
just about, you know, defending your honor.
Well, sometimes... There was definitely some death involved.
Well,
certainly
there are many instances, but
mainly you just want that snazzy scar on your face,
right? You can be like, man, I that's right, I got in a duel. But the point is that there's some information that just didn't transition from the Middle Ages, from the 14th century to 18th century, and so we began to think of swords in a very different way.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One last note on the weight of medieval swords. I have a quote here from the late Ewart Oxholt, who was a who wrote the book Sword in Hand, and he was a leading expert on medieval swords. He said, medieval swords are neither unwieldably heavy nor all alike. The average weight of any one of normal size is between 2.5 pounds and 3.5 pounds.
That's right, yeah.
Even the big hands and a half war swords rarely weighed more than 4.5 pounds. Such weights to men who were trained to use the sword from the age of 7 and who had been tough specimens to survive that age were by no means too great to be too practical. So,
Okay, so yeah. That's like the weight I'd use in my step aerobics class if I went to a step aerobics class, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, in one hand, so
yeah,
no big deal.
Thankfully, they do not let you bring swords to the Y, right?
Well, I did tell you about the belly dancing class.
Oh.
Actually, she never brought a sword. She just would talk about when she was belly dancing.
Oh, that's like, right, because the belly dancers would do that thing where they have the sword balanced on their head. And
yeah, and they bounce it on their stomach. It's pretty exciting stuff. So
it
she
is.
Would always say to the classes, if we all had, you know, swords at home, okay, so this is a part where you just kind of jut up your hip and so on and so forth. One of the things I did want to mention, too, is this the skill that you needed in order to wield this instrument? Because think about it. In this case, you are attacking and defending yourself at the same time.
Right.
And to me, it's like this physical game of chess because you have to try to figure out what your opponent is doing. So every attack contains a defense and every defense contains a counterattack.
Right. So, because you attack, you open yourself up potentially for an attack from either the person you're dealing with mm-hmm. or some other individual on the field of battle.
Yeah. And that's why there were so many manuals that were mm-hmm. instructing people. And it was, I kind of think of it now too, if you get a Samsung, I don't know, some sort of electrical device and then you get a user's manual with it. I like to imagine
right.
that, you know, back in the day, you got your sword and a little user's manual to say, this is the best use of the sword, given how it's weighted and how your body should be an extension of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is how you should lunge.
I will try and make sure that I mention this on a blog post or just on the Facebook page for Stuff to Blow Your Mind. But if anyone wants to see some images of like the long sword user manual, if you will, there's an excellent resource called, it was written in 1459 by Hans Talhofer called Alte Amateur und Ringkunst. And,
nice.
And the whole text is available online and you can browse through it and see how to use a longsword, a dagger, a spear, a poleaxe, and even wrestle. So.
All right.
Unarmed and armed combat. So.
Very cool.
All hands have you covered.
I did want to mention, too, in skill and in a cultural use of swords, kendo, Japanese swordsmanship.
Yes.
Very cool. They follow a very rigid rules that are meant to instill as much integrity into dueling as possible. For instance, when you're about to attack your opponent, you actually make a thumping sound with your foot to sort of signify, like, hey, I'm about to rip you a new one.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of Japanese swordsmanship, I would be remiss if I did not mention that one of the great sword fighters of all time.
Zoro?
Not Zoro. Was Miyamoto Musashi, author of the Book of Five Rings. 16th, 17th centuries Ronin swordsman. His reputation is just right up there at the top of real-life dudes. And, you know, probably fictional dudes, too.
Yeah. And it turns out there are a lot of these real life dudes.
Magical weapons. This is something that that I found really cool for a number of years since I first discovered it. And that is that you have these blades, these mm-hmm. swords that are not just made from iron. They're made from meteoric iron. They're made from iron that fell from the sky in the form of a meteorite mm-hmm. or multiple meteorites. Because generally, in some cases, you might have enough. Meteoric iron there to forge one sword, but generally you're having to poke around.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have Terry Pratchett, the author of the Discworld novels. He actually has a sword made from such iron, and it's, you know, very much a novelty. It's, you know, it's a cool thing to have. There was a time though before smelting technology really took hold, back in the Bronze Age, before mining allowed us to really harvest iron ore. This is one of the few sources of iron. And that was, you know, you'd have to go out like in the desert mm-hmm. somewhere where like black bits of stone that have fallen from the sky will show up, really easily. Somebody would gather these together. They'd get sold here and there. And then they'd wind up in the hands of a metal worker and mm-hmm. a swordsman. And, you would have, these just fantastic weapons. The ancient Egyptians called it black copper. And it was generally just considered, you know, the best metal to have, the best weapon to have. And it often end up being sort of ceremonial because the dudes that can afford the best swords or can also probably afford not to have to use them, right? Mm-hmm. The 7th century caliphs, of the Middle East were said to have brandished these weapons. And supposedly such iconic figures as Attila the Hun and Tamerlane also, wielded these cosmic blades against their enemies. Like I say, that just blows my mind there, just thinking about these ancient dudes carrying around these blades forged from the heavens. And you can imagine, imagine how you get tales of magical weapons just off of that.
I mean, can you imagine an eBay back then? That would have been very sought after. Of course it is today, too. But it makes me think about how when we talk about ancient swords, that we think about the material and the mm-hmm. techniques as being primitive by today's technological standards. But in fact, their techniques were really advanced. And what I'm talking about here is a sword possibly, forged out of nanotechnology.
Yes, the Damascus blade. These are sabers from Damascus, now known as Syria. And they date back generally to around 900 AD. And they were just considered the ultimate weapon to have at hand because they were strong, but they were sharp and light, and they could supposedly cleave a silk scarf in two as it was floating to the ground. I think there are tales too that it could cut through not only the knight, but riding a horse, but the horse as well, and all the armor and the saddle
in
just one swoop, right?
Yeah, there's a saying, something like cleaved man and horse together and all armor in twain.
That was on the ad. On the packaging for it.
That's right, yeah.
When you would buy it at the sword store.
And there are some people who think that the steel for the blade actually originated in India, but because it was exported to Europe through Damascus, it was assumed to be its source.
Yeah, it comes down to these Wootz cakes, right?
Yeah, which sounds delicious.
It sounds delicious, yeah. Like it's, you know, nice and oatmeal on the outside mm-hmm. and then like some creamy gooiness in the middle.
I was about to say a surprise in the middle,
yeah. Oh, in a way there was a surprise in the middle.
These
cakes had... had iron in them, mm-hmm. and with apparently just a perfect array of impurities that lent itself exceedingly well to the creation of these magnificent swords.
Right.
That being said, the guys hauling these Wootz cakes out of the ground, they didn't necessarily recognize what was great about them. They just mm-hmm. realized that they were they could sell these for some good coin. The metal workers realized that these could be used really well to create something. But now modern scientists have been looking at the Damascus blade. In particular, they've been looking at one that dates back to, I believe, the 17th century. And, you know, studying it and trying to figure out exactly what made it awesome.
Right,
and
it has a really high carbon content
right.
in it.
So they dissolve part of the weapon, actually, in hydrochloric acid and studied it under an electron microscope. And they found that the steel there contained these carbon nanotubes. And these are, like, each one of these is just slightly larger than a nanometer. We've covered these before. These are the carbon nanotube is kind of the, you know, one of the golden childs of nanotechnology.
Right.
The idea that you're taking these little minuscule carbon tubes and if you build something out of them, then the material is strong and flexible. It's the thing that people talk about building space elevators out of. And,
right.
and you know,
it's 100 times stronger than steel and much lighter.
Yeah. And the researchers also say that they discovered nanoscale wires of cementite, mm-hmm. an extremely hard carbon iron compound.
It's a carbon steel geometry.
Yeah, they were probably formed inside the nanotubes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody's making an ancient aliens or, you know, technology of the ancients argument here to say that, the Damascus swordsmiths of old had nanotechnology. Well, not exactly. They didn't know that. They're not saying that they knew there were carbon nanotubes in here.
No, it was sort of a fortuitous accident, right?
Yeah, and you see even earlier examples of this in like stained glass and various glass blowing techniques that would end up using what we would later understand as nanotechnology to change their coloring.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you and it's like we said before, if you change something at the smallest level, you can greatly increase the way a substance behaves, its various
right.
properties, even chemical properties. The argument here is that is what is inadvertently going on in the creation of these blades.
Yeah, and they were saying to you that, I mean, if you think about it this way, like the edge of the blade would almost be like it was composed of tiny diamonds,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's why it's so effective in slicing. And there are also accounts of it being self-sharpening, which, again, we don't know whether or not that was the case.
Now, there were a number of people. This initial study came out a few years back, and even when it came out, there were a number of people that were also kind of doubtful. They were like, I don't think that this is you're necessarily seeing what you think you're seeing,
mm-hmm.
Or I think you're seeing something that is present in most steel if you really looked at it. As far as I can tell, there's no definitive word yet on exactly what the deal is with Damascus steel, other than it's, the craftsmanship is still above reproach, but.
Right. And this is actually, again, this is the sword that they cannot replicate in terms
right.
of the high carbon content and its ability not to become brittle or break.
Right. Yeah. The recipe for it was lost, centuries ago. And since that time, also the Wootz cakes were all used up for the most part. So,
well, you know, yeah. What do you expect? Put them out at a party. Everybody's going to eat them.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some fun with swords. How can I have fun with swords?
Well, like you mentioned, you can, aside from dueling on the subway, you can dance with them, of course.
Yes.
I love seeing, the sword dancing with the belly dancers. That's always frightening and beautiful to behold, because what if it falls off and it kills somebody in the restaurant? But,
I know, what a bummer night.
Yeah. But then there's also sword swallowing.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to mention too that there are Scottish sword dances too, just in case.
Oh, okay.
Presumably they perform them before the swordsman uses the blade to cut the haggis.
Do women dance or the men dance?
The men do.
Okay.
Yeah. There's sword swallowing, and we actually have a really great article, How Sword Swallowing Works, by Pop Stuff's Tracy Wilson. You should check out. And that looks like it's just a sleight of hand trick, but it is not.
They're really sticking it down their throats.
Really putting it in their GI tract.
So there you have it, the sword.
Sword.
Yeah.
Swords.
Some of the things that make them amazing. Some of the things that you might not have known about how they're made and how they are used by skilled hands. All right. So speaking of skilled hands, let's get some hands on some listener mail.
Are you talking about a robot?
Yes.
Yeah. Skilled hands. That sounded kind of creepy.
They're skilled hands. Yeah. There you go. Look how well he handles.
I haven't received a back massage from our robot. That would be weird.
All right. Here's one from Russ. Russ writes in, Dear Robert and Julie, I wanted to thank you both for the great work you do on your podcast. You guys have gotten me through many boring hours on the treadmill with topics that are far more mind-bending and thought-provoking than just staring at a wall or a muted TV. High praise. Your podcast is really great. I recently just listened to the podcast about the future of stink, and ironically enough, I saw something the next day in a hotel lounge in Serbia while I was on a business trip, and I thought you might find it interesting. It's called an aroma burner. brand, and it blows a certain type of smell into the lounge. The lounge has a kind of homey type feel as a result of the smell, and it had a type of wood-burning fireplace, apple pie baking, incense smell to it. It made me feel more at home there, oddly enough, since Serbia is just about as far from my home as possible, since I'm from Chicago. But I'm guessing that's what the benefit of Aroma brand is meant to be. At any rate, it was definitely better than the smell of David Beckham's sweaty sock. Thanks again for doing such a great podcast, and happy holidays to you both. Because he sent this and we were reading it during the holidays.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for that. And for anybody who missed that podcast about smell, we actually had a sample of David Beckham's foot molecules, which smelled incredibly like cheese.
Cheesy, yeah.
And it confused me because I was sort of attracted to it, but then I thought it was cheese, and then I was completely repulsed.
Yeah.
I had a lot of feelings to work out after that podcast.
Yeah, and certainly that's one of the things we talked about in the podcast, just about how much goes into our interpretation of smell, mm-hmm. whether it's a good smell or a bad smell, and how our memory wraps around it. So yeah, there you go. But what do you guys have to share with us? Do you have something you want to share about swords? What is your favorite sword fight in cinematic history? What is your favorite sword-related kill in cinematic history? Let us know. We'd love to hear about it. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, we're Stuff to Blow the Mind. And on Twitter, you can find us by searching for Stuff to Blow Your Mind. But our handle is Blow the Mind, one word.
And you can always email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.